From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. And I'm open. The man who brought us ClimateGate, Brian Sussman, joins us. Eco-tyranny. Get ready for that. And next hour, will bio-robots take over the planet? Darwin's Devices with John Long. Here's what's happening. Well, you've heard it on this program over the years. The late Zechariah Sitchin talking about an extra planet, Nibiru, in this solar system. Mark Hazelwood, Nancy Leader, everybody talking about Planet X. Well, get this. A yet undiscovered planet might be orbiting at the dark fringes of the solar system, according to new research. Too far out to be easily spotted by telescopes, the potential unseen planet appears to be making its presence felt by disturbing the orbits of the so-called Kuiper Belt objects, according to Rodney Gomes, an astronomer at the National Observatory of Brazil. Kuiper Belt objects are small icy bodies, including some dwarf planets, that lie beyond the orbit of Neptune. Once considered the ninth planet in our system, the dwarf planet Pluto, for example, is one of the largest Kuiper Belt objects at about 1,400 miles wide. Dozens of the other objects are hundreds of miles across, and more being discovered every year. What's intriguing, according to Gomes, is that, according to his calculations, about a half a dozen Kuiper Belt objects, including the remote body known as Sedna, are in very strange orbits compared to where they should be, based on existing solar system models. The objects' unexpected orbits have a few possible explanations, he said, but I think one of the easiest is a planetary mass somewhere out there. Can you believe that? How about that? An asteroid the size of a school bus gave planet Earth a very close shave, passing well inside the orbit of the moon, but our planet was never in any danger of being hit this time. The near-Earth asteroids called 2012 JU, which is thought to be about 40 feet wide, came to within 119,000 miles or so of our planet before zooming off into deep space. Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky with us. You know what bothers me, Stephen, about this is they find out after it's passed the planet, not before. George.
Exactly. And good morning to all the Coast listeners, wherever you might be. It's so amazing, George. You're right. We're hearing more and more of these objects being discovered after, and we're all going, phew, wow, what a breath of fresh air, because we weren't struck. But some data that I found out about this 2012 JU, you're right, discovered recently, but after the fact, of the 8,900 near-Earth asteroids, get a look at this, some 1,287 right now, including this, are listed as PHAs, potentially hazardous asteroids.
Jeez.
And just to give the scenario, if it were not to pass us by the 119,000 miles, astronomers and reliable sources tell us the kinetic energy in this particular object, 40 to 50 feet across, would yield, get a look at this, George, over 133 kilotons of TNT energy. That's literally something that we don't need to happen anytime in the near future. And sadly, even though the United Nations and all groups around the world are slowly starting to take, you know, put some credence into maybe a plan, it's a long way off. And for all the listeners out there, I want to remind everybody that every time, George, we get a close object like this, there's a phenomenon that we don't talk about much. It's lunar meteors. So those out there observing with telescopes, seriously looking at the moon, there may be an opportunity for people. No, we can't guarantee it. There may be some asteroid-type objects, meteors, large particles still traveling along with this asteroid that may somehow strike the moon. And we've observed this many times before with telescopes and people like ourselves. So always, as we talk about keeping our eyes to the skies, getting set for that big solar eclipse on Sunday, don't miss it if you're in the western part of the United States.
Thank you, Stephen. It's just a matter of... not it, but when we're going to get hit. Now imagine this. You're driving your car or you're walking, and all of a sudden a surveillance camera starts talking at you, starts yelling at you. Pick up that piece of paper you just dropped, or this, or that. That's what's happening now. Talking surveillance cameras, it's going to be the thing. It's going to happen. High-tech streetlights, homeland security applications are being installed in major U.S. cities. The lights, the streetlights also have loudspeakers. They give warnings to individuals. It's just unbelievable. They have this in the United Kingdom already. They shout out orders through microphones telling people to leave the area, pick up litter, do whatever happens. My gosh. Ron Paul of Texas says he will not compete in primaries in any of the states that have not yet voted, essentially confirming Mitt Romney will win the Republican presidential nomination. Now, Ron Paul's not out of the race, not quitting. He will continue to work to win his delegates in the states that have already voted. He wants to be able to make his voice heard at the Republican nominating convention in Tampa, Florida, but he's going to cease competing in primaries that haven't voted yet. J.P. Morgan Chase says its chief investment officer is going to leave after a $2 billion trading blunder. The Wall Street firm said Ina Drew, who oversaw the London-based division responsible for the trading mistake, will leave after more than 30 years. Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. Greg, do they even know where the mistake is?
Well, listen, no, they don't quite know where the mistake is, but they were trading in derivatives. And this was the part of the business that was supposed to hedge J.P. Morgan's risk. In other words, they were supposed to stop losses. But this is more than what Jamie Dimon said. They were just errors and sloppiness and bad judgment. This is a systemic problem in that these derivatives caused a $2 billion, boom, out of nowhere loss. And they take these insane leverage. Now, we know what happened to MF Global. They had a $6 billion loss. Now, they're a pup tent compared to J.P. Morgan, but right. Still, MF Global was the primary dealer of treasuries. It was run by a former senator and former governor of the state. They had a $6 billion loss. They had $240 billion leverage on that $6 billion. So, you know, in a $240 billion portfolio, you have a small couple of 2.5% move. Boom, your capital's wiped out. Now, and that's the problem with trading in these exotic derivatives, and that's also the problem with banks like J.P. Morgan being too big to fail, because when they fail, we all fail, because they have FDIC
insurance.
That's right.
We've got to bail them out. Isn't this the same kind of problem that happened in 2008 that caused all this?
Yes, but I think it's worse than in 2008. You know, they gutted the FinReg bill in 2010. Jamie Dimon was an outspoken opponent of any more regulation. But, you know, when the thing blows up, and listen, this is more going to be more, end up more than $2 billion. I mean, the president, Barack Obama, is on The View tomorrow, but he was taped today saying, you know, well, it's $2 billion. Listen for it, and counting, $2 billion and counting. And how much is the loss, $3 billion, $10 billion?
Why didn't anybody stop derivative trading back in 2008 after
Brooklyn
this?
Brooklyn Bourne tried to do it at the CFTC back in, what, 99? And, boy, she got beat down because the bankers didn't want that. They wanted to take crazy risk. And here's
they're gamblers.
Well, yes, because there is no public market. That means there is no there are no regulations. There are no guarantees. There is no bid-ask price discovery. You don't know what this – there's no public market for this stuff. So it's just a wild, wild west shootout. And if J.P. Morgan got caught with their pants down around their ankles and a $2 billion out-of-nowhere hit, it could be more. What about all the other banks? What about Citi? And what about Morgan? And what about Wells Fargo? And what about all the other banks that have derivatives?
They've all got to be scrambling right now. Thank you so much. We'll keep watching this story unfold. Jeez. Adult sleepwalkers are more common than previously realized, with upward of 8 million American adults prone to nighttime sleepwalking, according to a new study. In fact, about 3.6% of the adults in the U.S. alone have walked in their sleep at least once in previous times. Researchers report this in the journal Neurology. Look, if you have a kid, be careful. Cases of children rushing to emergency rooms after accidentally swallowing the little tiny batteries found in many household gadgets have doubled over the past two decades. Serious complications, including fatalities, can arise when so-called button batteries found in items ranging from remote control devices to children's toys get lodged in the esophagus. I can think of nothing worse than watching your child choke to death in front of you, and there's almost nothing you can do. You can pick them up and try to smack them on the back and stuff like that. But my gosh, just be careful with the toys and things that you give them to play with. Look at them. See if you can open it. And if you can, chances are they can. So be careful. Sad news to report. Coast to Coast guest Grant Jeffrey, recognized as one of the leading teachers on biblical prophecy, is dead, dying of a heart attack. Mitchell Geist, one of the stars of the hit reality TV show Swamp People, has died. Geist appeared on the show with his brother Glenn. Their History Channel biographies say swampers through and through. Glenn and Mitchell were born and raised on the bayou and lived entirely off the land. These brothers are always up to something, whether it's hunting for their dinner or making use of everything nature has to offer. Yeah, he ate everything. According to the sheriff, Geist was in his boat along the Bell River when he apparently simply fell. Witnesses said it looked like he had some kind of a seizure. Swamp People has been a hit for the History Channel. Currently in its third season, the show focuses on the lives of alligator hunters in rural Louisiana. The brothers joined in the second season. Mitchell was 82. Avengers, the superhero movie, has topped the U.S. and Canadian box office for the second week in a row, taking in another $103 million. It's just going crazy. Up next, we're going to be talking about ClimateGate and eco-tyranny. Brian Sussman is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Brian Sussman's investigation into the ClimateGate email scandal within the esteemed climate research unit at the East Anglia University in the UK revealed the intentions of many profile scientists who are willing to manipulate data in order to further what Sussman has described as the green agenda. And his probe led him to write the best-selling book, ClimateGate, in which he was on our program. And now he has a new book out called Eco-Tyranny, and we're going to talk about that this hour. Brian, welcome back. How are you?
George, it's great to speak with you and your audience. I listen to this program regularly. Yes, I'm an insomniac. I have a morning show in San Francisco that begins about 5 a.m., but I do catch your program a couple hours every night, and I love it.
Well, super. And, of course, you're an Emmy Award-winning television meteorologist as well and science reporter. You've done it all. We've talked before, Brian, about how we're in a cycle. This planet goes through these cycles. What's the agenda here? Why are they really doing this?
You know, George, this is fascinating. I wrote ClimateGate because I was concerned about the ClimateGate email scandal, of course, at East Anglia University, and I had no idea the book would become a bestseller. I think it was just a great timing. So now, as I was researching ClimateGate, I just became really interested in so many left-leaning thinkers over time who talked about the environment and they wanted to use it as a tool to hammer capitalism, free markets, liberty, etc. Now, I know right off the bat, people hear me talk and they say, okay, this guy's a kook. What is he getting at here? Well, it all goes back to, George, I'm like you. I read a lot of stuff.
You have to.
I always want to keep informed and I read history. I'm a lover of history. I like to read Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. I will tell you that right now. These guys were incredible wordsmiths, and they were very deep thinkers. I don't agree with the vast majority of that which they had to say, but listen, they were academics, and I like reading their stuff. I came across a document that they wrote in 1883 called Dialectics of Nature. They were smitten by a friend of theirs named Justus von Liebig, who is a biologist, and Justus von Liebig came across the first environmental crisis that the world had ever seen. It involved guano or bird droppings, bird poop.
And bats do that too, right?
They all do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great organic fertilizer. And Justus von Liebig was watching the farmers in England use this fertilizer, and their crops were growing, and now people were eating healthier, and they were having larger families, and they were having more livestock, and they were having more horses, and they were building bigger houses, and they were cutting down the forest for those houses. He saw all this, and he said, my God, this can't continue. He said, look at what this guano's doing. It's creating more horse poop. It's creating more human excrement. It's causing people to tear down the forest to build these bigger houses. People are living longer. He saw it as a travesty. And he wrote about this extensively. And again, he was a good friend of Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. And Marx and Engels said, wait a second. Well, wait a second. You know, we're not big fans of capitalism. And this is capitalism run amok. And it's creating an environmental crisis. How about if we propose a theory? What if the theory is this? Capitalism's pollution creates problems with the environment. And what if those problems with the environment could actually become problems with the weather and the climate? What if those problems could create another ice age and kill all the species on the planet? So it was a very well-crafted document, Dialectics of Nature. I put it in the book Eco-Tyranny because I wanted people to see this. So again, the first climate scare came from the minds of Marx and Engels to try to defeat capitalism.
Is it possible, Brian, that those who were proponents of global warming, man-made global warming, mm-hmm. might have taken some of these writings and pushed their own agenda with it?
Well, it's very possible, because when you start to look at the trail here, it's rather interesting. First, you have, as I mentioned, Justice von Liebig, and then you have Karl Marx and Frederick Engels. One of their disciples was a man named Lancaster. Lancaster spent a lot of time with Karl Marx, and Lancaster also subscribed to this whole idea that mankind was destroying nature. In fact, he called man the insurgent son of nature. You go from Lancaster to Arthur Tainsley, another disciple of Karl Marx, and this is a gentleman who also felt that mankind was ruining the planet via capitalism and capitalism's pollution. In fact, he coined the term ecology as a convenient term to try meld capitalism and pollution together to show people how it was ruining nature. And then you could just fast forward all the way to Rachel Carson, another gifted wordsmith who wrote Silent Spring. I started looking at some of her research in creating her book, which, of course, still sells to this day in any bookstore. And she, of course, did not have pleasant things to say about capitalism either. But you start looking at the many people she quotes in her book, and my gosh, I mean, these were card-carrying communists. So, again, George, I know this sounds way, way out there, but I'm just connecting the dots, and I'm seeing this pattern of people who are not fond of liberty, and they're constantly using, or maybe even we could say hijacking, the environmental movement to put forward this global agenda, which doesn't have to do with clean air and clean water.
Which you are, I am, and so many other people are concerned about.
Yes.
Everybody wants clean air, clean water, healthy for. So nobody wants to see all the Amazon cut down.
No.
But I think you're right. I think they pick this agenda and they run with it for their own means. And, you know, everybody else jumps on that bandwagon. That's starting to change, though, Brian. I'm really feeling that scientists, more than ever, are beginning to say, now, wait a minute. Maybe global warming isn't just caused by man. Maybe it's happening because this planet is going through these things. And I think that's what's beginning to happen.
Well, sure. And George, we know that if you and I went up to the Arctic Circle right now with shovels, we could dig down about 10 feet and we'd start bumping into the carcasses, not the bones, the actual carcasses of hyenas and camels and llamas and other creatures that do not belong in the Arctic Circle.
That's right.
Illustrating that there have been massive climate shifts over the years. And I think as honest scientists, we just need to be able to say, I don't know why that occurred. Climate is going to change. We have the Milankovitch cycles, which are real. That means that the Earth does not travel around the sun in a perfect circle. It's an ellipse. Right now, we're in a perfect place for human existence. But there will come a time thousands of years from now as we drift farther away from the sun, where there will, sure as shooting, be another ice age, and mankind is going to have to figure out if it will be able to survive that. It's going to be very, very severe, and it will happen, George.
I think what might have also happened to, like, the mammoth, the woolly mammoth that they found in Siberia with still food in its mouth,
mm-hmm.
something tragic and very catastrophic happened fast, Brian, didn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, we can theorize a lot of different things, but there's no question when you look at how these animals, as I just noted, even the hyena and the camel and the lions and the tigers and the bears, oh my, in the Arctic Circle, how they just, they're literally, their bodies are intact. The fur, the meat, the food in the mouth, as you just described, something cataclysmic happened just like that. And there are many wonderful theories, I'm sure, and I know that one of them is true, but it's okay for me as a scientist to be able to say, I don't know.
Well, we're concerned also about so many things, Brian, that are going on, as you are, like smart meters, the smart grid. I want you to tell us when we come back in just a moment how far this has advanced. I'm getting emails from a mini show we did a few weeks ago about smart meters, and people who never even knew that they had any went outside, looked at their meters, and went, oh my gosh, they're smart meters. And I started getting a lot of emails about that. Stay with us with our special guest, Brian Sussman. His website, of course, briansussman.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. We're talking about his latest work, Eco-Tyranny, and we'll be back in a moment. More to talk with him about and some of your calls as well on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Brian Sussman with us, author of Eco-Tyranny. Smart meters, Brian, they're going up all over the place, all over the place. What's their intent? What do you think?
George, I'll tell you exactly what the intent is. I'm one of these guys that reads everything that comes out of the federal government involving energy policy. And I read the Federal Energy Act of 2005 that was signed into law by George W. Bush, and Section 1252 grabbed my attention because it states it will be the policy of the United States that demand response technology shall be encouraged. Whenever the government says shall be encouraged, that means it's soft law. It's something they're going to push, but they can't mandate. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they will push really, really hard. So, George, I read that in 2005. I said, I don't know what demand response technology is. So I did my research, and that leads us to the smart meter. The smart meter is being placed on virtually every house in America. And I know many of your listeners have tried, in some cases successfully, at least for now, to prevent those smart meters from being attached to their house.
Mm-hmm.
But it allows the utility to actually know exactly how much energy you're using on a minute-by-minute basis, and that energy usage is being recorded. Here's where it all goes. The smart meter will be eventually attached to the home area network. Of course, I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there are many companies racing to develop the home area network, which will be attached to every electrified device, in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be, of course, sold as a convenience. Well, of course, you'll want to be able to control these things with a touch of a switch. You can touch them or start them remotely, turn them off remotely. You could be in another part of the country and turn on your television, your alarm, whatever it may be. That will be then connected to the smart grid. The smart grid is going to be broadband interactive. Of course, this is funded with stimulus dollars. It's here. It's coming. It's also mandated by the 2005, or I should say soft-lawed by the 2005 energy bill, but it's coming. There's no stopping the smart grid. So just to kind of sum up what all this is going to look like, George, and again, this is all extremely well documented. I'm the first guy to ever write about it. And let's just say it's a hot day down in Los Angeles. It's, you know, 101 degrees.
And everybody's got their air conditioners.
Everybody's got the airco on, and you've set yours. You're thinking, okay, I'll set mine at 85. I'll set mine at 85 degrees. You're also watching the Dodgers on the big screen. And, you know, for whatever reason, you've got a big event that night, and you've got some dirty clothes, and you need to run the laundry. And so you're doing that. It's 3 in the afternoon. There's going to be some bureaucrat, or more likely a robot, who's going to be able to literally look at your address and say, my gosh, look at Mr. Norrie. Okay, let's take that air conditioner, move it from 85. Oh, just shut the air conditioner off altogether. That's ridiculous. He shouldn't be using the air conditioner.
Yeah, he doesn't need it, and he's leaving in 2 hours anyway.
Absolutely. Then, right. We know his schedule. Then they'll say something like, then they'll be able to say, my gosh, that's got to be a 50-inch television screen. Okay, turn that off. Do not let that come back on until 8 p.m. And the laundry, are you kidding me? Turn off the washer. Don't let the dryer come on. Those will not come on until after midnight. They will have the power to do all that. And by the way, every time you buy an appliance that is an Energy Star appliance, it already has these capabilities built into it. It's just waiting for the smart grid to be hooked up. Now, why are they doing this? Because they want to monitor your carbon footprint, and thereby, I believe, control your life. And the goal with all of this, as I describe in Eco-Tyranny, is to eventually just get us to live a lifestyle that's dumbed down, not so opulent, the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
I mean, will they ever get to a point, Brian, where, of course, we know what social media can do these days, not only with news, but information and getting things quickly to other people? I mean, a story breaks nowadays. We don't have to worry about the old days where we had to worry about having it on the radio or watching television. Now it's instant. Now on your smartphone, you know, your little Twitter thing pops up and there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Would they have that capability of saying, look, something's going to happen and we don't want anybody panicking. We're shutting down everybody's computer. We're shutting down all the internets right now. Boom. Can they do that with a smart system?
Sure. The smart system is going to be incredibly smart. Again, when I first heard that they want to, we've heard the last two administrations talk about bringing broadband to rural areas. Well, okay, is that so farmers and ranchers can watch YouTube? I don't think so. It has to do with the smart grid having interactive capabilities, so now there will be communication going both ways through the grid
so that things just as you described could actually occur. Maybe there's an emergency. You know what? Let's shut down all communication devices. People don't need to be panicked right now. Certainly, if there's a power emergency, we'll just shut down all the power. And George, something else I talk about in eco-tyranny that's very important. I mean, we're going to have 50 million more people in this country in 20 years.
Yeah.
100 million more in 40 years. We need to be adequately supplied with power. And, you know, you and I are in California. The line has always been whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over. We need more water in all of our states. We need more available land to accommodate all these newcomers. But the smart meter is just a way to control us and to force us to use less energy, because the plan from these nefarious ones who have taken over the environmental movement is to make sure you use less, not ever get more.
Now, before I go to calls with you, Brian, let me be the devil's advocate for a moment. Mm-hmm. Is there anything wrong with governments saying we need to preserve energy for people, and this is the only way we can do it? We can't have George running his air conditioner and his flat screen and his washer and dryer at the same time in a crisis. We've got to be able to shut that down. Now, George might not want to do it on his own. We may have to do it in order to save it for the masses.
It's an excellent devil's advocate question, and it's an important one. We need to have this discussion. The argument that I make in eco-tyranny is we have so many wonderful alternative sources of energy available to us. We could start going through, we could begin talking about hydroelectricity. And there is a plan in place right now to tear down every dam in America. This started with Bruce Babbitt, who was the Interior Secretary mm-hmm. some years ago. You've seen where nuclear power has gone in this country. And we're always told that it's the waste that's going to prevent us from having the nuclear power. But if we would recycle our nuclear waste the way every other country does, waste wouldn't be an issue. We could use that 100% clean, green source of energy. If the government, I believe, would get out of subsidizing solar and wind, those would have an opportunity to flourish and allow the free market to determine how those are going to be used properly. And then, of course, we have oil and gas, and we have so much oil and gas in this country. I just don't want to be a slave to OPEC. I don't think that these countries have our best interests in mind, and I would really like to see us responsibly be able to tap those resources so that we could get off out from under the shadow of OPEC.
Okay, to the phones we go. We'll go to Paul in Phoenix to get things started. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just wondering if your guest had heard of two names, Silver Spring Networks and microwave weapons expert Barry Troer.
I'm familiar with Silver Springs Network because I believe that Al Gore's actually been invested in that company. And they are working heartily on various applications and technologies for the smart grid. I'm not familiar with the other company, Paul.
It's not a company. It's a scientist. He was with the British Royal Navy.
What was the name again?
Barry Troer, BarryTroer.
Yeah, not familiar.
He's a microwave weapons specialist. He was the guy that interviewed the spies back in the Cold War, for that top secret weapon at the time. Evidently, the Russians were beaming microwaves into the Moscow embassy for communications. They had an antenna and a plaque up on the wall, and it was they were able to listen in on our conversations. Well, by doing that, they got our guys sick, and they killed two ambassadors back to back with leukemia. They both died within 2 years of each other, and they had all kinds of DNA damage in the workers and high rates of cancer and the whole bit. And so they kind of took that technology and said, oh, wow, wait, we've got something here. Instead of stopping it, you know, they supposedly made, you know, microwave weapons. Well, these smart meters are all wireless. And I only know about this because I was at home the day they put one on the side of my house. And I woke up at 3:10 the next day. And I didn't know anything about what a smart meter was. Since then, it's been over a year. I've researched this, investigated this every day. I woke up at 3:10 for a month straight. Okay, I had to move. I had to get out, get away. It's an eerie type of wake up. You're
Paul,
in one moment
the same
and then
story.
Up the next.
Anecdotally, I have heard these same stories, even from my own brother-in-law, who just recently was having these same episodes in the middle of the night, just terrible sleep, and he realized that smart meter had been attached to his house.
That's right.
I've been hearing this more and more from so many people, and I know a lot of folks are doing research on this. And in California, it has caused an uprising in certain communities whereby they've been able to, at least for now, stop the smart meter from being attached to their house. So because this is demand response technology and because these are all remotely, you know, these are remote control devices. And obviously there is something going on here, the likes of which I don't understand because I don't study that portion of the science. But we're hearing too many stories like this to let it go.
It's all about control, Brian, isn't it?
I do believe that. And, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely with some people. And you can go back to many of the demagogues and dictators over time, and they've all had this thing in them, which really stems from the bowels of Marx and Engels, who believe that certain people are spit out of their mother's womb with a little better brain than others, and those people have some sort of responsibility to the planet to make sure that those with a lesser brain stay under control, lest they kill one another and destroy the planet. So this kind of brings about an elitist mindset, George, whereby some people really think it's their goal, it's their role in life to control everyone. And these elitists live oftentimes very opulent lifestyles, while at the same time they're telling us that we need to reduce our carbon footprint, but they justify that because they say, listen, I am good for the planet. I know what I'm talking about, and therefore I will tell these others how to live.
Let's go next to Jim, east of the Rockies, out there in the Pittsburgh area. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Brian.
Good to have you with us.
Okay, good to talk to you. I had a question. Would it not be possible, I assume these meters, these energy storage meters, are controlled by low-frequency radio waves. Would it not be possible to put RF chokes in the line and prevent any control being taken over of any of your plans?
I actually, George, do know how to prevent the smart meter from operating. I probably shouldn't tell people over the course.
We don't want anybody electrocuted here, Brian.
Well, and not only that, I don't know, there may be some legal issues, but it's actually quite simple to disconnect one of these devices, and you can pretty much do it without any tools.
Could you hire an electrician to do it? Would they do that?
Probably not. This is attached to your house, but because you have a contract with the utility provider.
It's theirs.
You know, this is one of the reasons why I'm a huge advocate. If I think the best way to use solar power would be to use it and actually remove yourself from the grid. It's interesting, with all these rebate programs that are offered through the various governments, the federal government, the state government, probably even your county, depending on where you're listening to, they'll only give you the rebate for the solar as long as you remain hooked up to the grid. I can tell you, those solar panels on top of your house, they don't feed your house. They just go into the grid. So it's not like you're self-sufficient. If I want solar on my house, I want to be off the grid. And the current system really discourages that financially.
Well, wouldn't it be great to be off the grid and then have the capability of using it if you needed it? You know, let's say you're in an area that, you know, doesn't get a lot of sunshine. Maybe the Midwest, it's, you know, rainy for 2 weeks in a row sometimes. But it would sure be great if every house had the capability of self-sustaining itself with power.
I do, too. And again, okay, so, George, here's the deal. Why aren't we able to move in that direction? You know, there are the same group of people that don't want us to go there, because if you're self-sufficient, my gosh, depending on the value you place upon this, you could build one heck of an array that could power one heck of a big house. You could live a very, very opulent lifestyle, completely separate from the grid. But those who are not fond of capitalism don't like those kind of lifestyles, and that's why I believe they're making it very, very difficult in this society for us to cut loose from that type of system.
Good point. Cheryl is in Phoenix, west of the Rockies. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I had a man from our electric company come out today because I heard your show on smart meters.
Yeah.
And I was having all these symptoms. I was having head tremors and high blood pressure and just a huge list of really serious things. My chest, I went to a heart doctor, numerous doctors, and they came out today and they just said that everything's just fine. And I know that it's the smart meters, and there's no way for me to have them remove it as far as they're concerned, unless I get the whole complex to do it. And then each of us have to pay $20 a month more. Have it read. And I have suffered. I can't even live in my apartment. And that's pretty hard, you know, to have to leave your home.
Well, it sure is. And the $20 a month, Brian, that's a lot of money for people, extra.
It is a lot of money that's extra. And again, where is all this going as far as the utility companies are concerned? The price of electricity, and George, we're going to see this here in California next year when cap and trade comes into full effect. And the smart meter is at the very heart of that because they want to be able to bill you at a higher rate during the peak hours of usage. That's why they want to get these smart meters on your house, so they can essentially curtail the amount of energy. You know, it's dumbing you down. It's teaching you how to use power according to the way in which they want you to use it. But the bottom line here is, this is all when the smart meter and cap and trade come together in California, the price of electricity is going to go through the roof, and therefore, you know, just by way of simple economics, we're going to start using less. Well, that's their goal. They don't want to build any more power plants of any kind. They want us to use less.
Less, yep. And there are more people.
And they're going to be even more over the next 20 years when we have 50 million more, and 40 years from now when we have 100 million more. And that's really the last half of eco-tyranny. I'm coming up with solutions because, George, I love this country. I love people. I want to make sure that people are in this country and able to pursue life, liberty, and happiness in such a way that, you know, that is reasonable as opposed to not reasonable, whereby you rolling blackouts will be a way of life.
I got an 18-year-old granddaughter. She's going to be 18 in June. And, you know, she's thinking, okay, I get out of high school. I'm going to go to college. Maybe I can get a little apartment. And I told her, I said, Ari, I want you to start playing with numbers and write down rent, food, this. I help her with, you know, things like her car and stuff. But I said, utilities and stuff. And you know what? Once she does that, she hasn't done that yet, and looks at those numbers, she's going to freak out.
Yes. And again, you know, here in California, we're moving into this brave new world where by 2050, they want us to live in what they're calling urban hubs, where we'll live in stack and pack housing, and our carbon footprint will be much smaller. And one of the ways that, of course, the reason why they are planning on us living like that is because, for one, the price of electricity is going to be through the roof.
No question about that. Brian, I wish we could take some more calls, but we're almost at the end here. Where do people get eco-tyranny?
George, by the way, I'll be speaking with you at ConspiracyCon.
Oh, super. You're going to be up in Santa Clara?
I can't wait. You're the headliner. I'm just going to be one of the other featured speakers.
Oops, I better write my speech.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person finally and meeting so many of your listeners. But I think Amazon.com, George, is probably the most expeditious way. They have got a great price right now, I noticed, for Eco Tyranny at Amazon.com. And then, of course, my website, BrianSussman.com, that'll take you to my various blogs where I have some spicy stuff going at all times regarding the environment.
Great. Thanks, Brian. We'll see you soon. Brian Sussman, I'll be back in a moment as we talk about Darwin's devices, robots. You're going to love this. That's next.